This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
My name's Nicole and I'm from Brisbane in Australia. I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired and had just begun yet another attempt at a non-drinking stint when I discovered the Over the Influence podcasts. The timing couldn't have been better. I binge listened to them all, joined the OTI community and have never looked back. If, like me, you've tried and tried to put down the plonk, but even after some success, keep finding yourself pulled back into the mire, join us in the OTI community, where we all share our stories of what works and what doesn't and where we're currently at. Everyone's just so full of understanding and inspiration. In a few weeks, I'll reach a whole year without a single drop, and I can't thank the OTI community enough. You guys rock and make all the difference in the booze-free world.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence, wherever you may be listening to this in the world, because basically we're massive now. Like, we're global and everything, and it's really, really quite exciting. I know, it just sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? And I can see Ben laughing here. When we started out doing this nonsense 3 years ago, he was like, Shaz, nobody's going to listen. And then two people started listening. One was my mum and the other was Ben's dad. And we're now hurtling towards like a million global downloads, which will never not blow our minds. We sing about sobriety week in, week out, and it's an absolute joy to do so. A quick reintroduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. After the summit this year, I'll be 5 years alcohol-free, which is completely and utterly bonkers. But I still think it's brilliant. And there's not one day goes by where I don't feel very, very grateful for making that decision to take what I thought would be a really boring break from booze back in 2018. It was far from boring. It was completely and utterly life-changing. And that's why this podcast exists, to let people know, to maybe let you know that there is a life outside of alcohol and it can be completely and utterly glorious. I don't sing about sobriety on my own, no. Ben Anderson, how are you doing?
Very well. Sharon Hartley, thank you. I realise I say very well every time, but it's true because I'm sober and, you know.
Very well, like, Mrs. Hartley.
Yeah, Miss very well, Sharon. But no, life is good. I'm a much more stable person since removing alcohol, which, Sharon, is 3 years ago on Thursday.
Get out.
3 years on Thursday.
Get out. Yeah. How? Blink and it's happened.
Yeah. My birthday, 26th of June, and I got so drunk on that. In 2020 it was. I woke up the next day and did that classic thing of, I can't do this again. But it felt different that time. I was like, I really don't want to do this again.
Yeah.
It was a couple more weeks. I let it kind of sink in, that thought. And it was, the 6th of July, 2020, that I gave up alcohol for good. And well, I say I gave up alcohol for good. I gave it up for 3 months thinking that I was going to return to drinking. And I wasn't even going to kind of use it as a reset and a rethink. I wasn't going to go back to drinking and kind of go, I'm going to drink differently this time. I was literally just doing the time. I was like, right, 3 months and I'm going to go back and drink exactly how I am drinking now. I got to 3 months and went, this is good. I'm going to extend it to six. Six became 12 and it was day 366 for me, which is nearly 2 years ago. And I decided, knock it on the head for good. I'm a better person, more well-rounded person, and just generally happier person without it.
It's dead annoying, isn't it? When we take that break and you're like, oh shit, they were right.
It works.
Anywho, here we are. Today's guest on Over the Influence. I'm dead excited. I feel a little bit giddy today for many reasons. He sounds giddy as well. You can hear him giggling in the background. We're crossing live now to the other side of the world, actual Australia, and being joined by what feels like a really old, not old that way, just a long-standing old and fabulous friend, Drew Schapper. How the hell are you?
I'm so good, mate. And it's so good to see you both and to chat to you. So thank you so much for having me. Feels like a long time since we caught up. So it's, really nice to see you both.
Drew, I will forever associate you with the really, really early stages of my alcohol-free journey. And we're talking the really early weeks. And we sort of connected in a group, didn't we? Pretty much around 5 years ago-ish. And you followed my story and I followed your story. And here we are still friends. And most importantly, still bloody sober.
Still sober. Who would have thought, hey, like 5 years ago. Yeah, because I remember very, very clearly your posts in that group early on. And I think we started around the same time, but I had a few more stumbles along the way. And but yeah, 5 years, I just never would have thought that you or I, given our history with alcohol, would be anywhere near that, you know. And like Ben was saying before, you know, I was just signing up for a month and I was just going to, like, you know, basically use it as a chance to reset my tolerance because I was feeling like I was able to drink too much. So I just sort of thought, oh, this is getting a bit cost ineffective. So I'll actually just, you know, reset that so I can get drunk quicker. And then, you know, turned out to be a very different path after that.
Oh, and here we are. Before we get into chatting about life for you, Drew, in Australia, and we want to talk about Dry July as well, I've got to ask you, how's your daughter? How's the family?
Oh, she's great. Yeah, we're all good. We're living down on the coast now, so we're out of Melbourne, living by the beach. Our daughter's doing grade one at school, so she's in her second year of primary school. Yeah, life's great. So, amazing. Yeah, it's a lot calmer and a lot less.
You know what is really, really funny? But I'll just quickly share this with you. One of Drew's posts that I remember. So, you know, I sort of looked upon Drew as a bit of a rock god, a rock star. This sort of, you know, really.
It's funny you say that because I remember you saying to me, I've got this friend who's a rock star and he did it. I was like, oh yeah, what does he do? And he was like, no, he's a rock star. I was like, oh, I thought you meant like, you know, he's a rock star. But he's actually genuinely
he's a
drummer in a band.
He's a rock star. We spoke so often about the crazy things you do in early sobriety. And I think there was one post that you shared, Drew, ages and ages ago. And you're like, yeah, I'm spending the weekend playing golf and baking cupcakes. And actually, between you and me, there's nothing I'd rather be doing. And it was like so far removed, wasn't it, from who
it really
you were
was.
In years gone by.
Absolutely. And you know, like you said in your intro, like that idea that you're sort of going to be really boring and you're going to have this boring time. It's really quite, that's a big surprise, I think, because it's not boring at all. It's like scary and it's crazy and life-changing, but it's anything but boring. And I think, you know, that was the huge surprise for me. I wasn't prepared for that to be not a boring experience. And yeah, I think that can be really scary at times, but it's wonderful as well.
Drew, before we talk about you and your story, can we talk about Dry July? Because it's just not a thing in the UK.
Not
at all, because obviously it's our summer at the moment and we've got Dry January. It hasn't quite got the same ring to it as Dry July. I do like the rhyme, but is Dry July basically, is it like opposite? So because obviously it's your winter now in Australia.
It's our depths of winter, yeah.
So is Dry January not a thing for you?
No, so we don't do Dry January here in Australia. We do Dry July, obviously in depths of winter. I think it's like an easier sell in Australia to get people to think about their drinking. It's a really good charity, actually. So they do a big push every year and try and get people to more than anything. I think it's just reassess their kind of drinking habits and I guess just experience like a health kick. But there's also Feb Fast and we do Sober October as well. So there's in the post-Christmas, post-summer holiday, you know, back to work, back to school things. February is a bit of a vibe here of, you know, be sober after a big summer of, you know, binge drinking or whatever. And then October as well, we have our sort of like football grand final and stuff like that. So there's a big like spring racing carnival and all this kind of stuff. So October is a thing as well. So there are those kind of 3 months, you know, of the year where there's drinking sort of a bit more in the spotlight. And I have noticed that over the past few years, it's definitely getting a bit more traction, and it seems like Australians are taking a bit more notice of, you know, how much alcohol they're drinking, and it seems like it's actually turning a bit of a corner here, which is really interesting because I think we have a very similar culture to the UK in that it's, you know, like get drunk, get quickly and you know, sort of live for the weekend and then get smashed all weekend and then crawl out of your hole and go back to work, and it's just a bit of a spiral, I think, for a lot of Australians. As it certainly was for me.
It does sound like our cultures are very similar, you know, and the kind of the binge drinking side of it potentially resonates with Australians as well.
I think so, yeah. I think in ways like maybe haven't seen as much in other parts of the world. I think that probably because, you know, Australia was, a a colony of the UK for so long, you know, we've sort of inherited that way of relating. And so lots of socialization is around alcohol, but then, you know, we are binge drinkers. Like, you know, most Aussies will, you know, work all week and not drink for the majority of the week. And then, you know, Friday, Saturday, they just get as hammered as possible, watch sport, do all that kind of thing. So it becomes very ingrained in the culture.
Really interesting what you said there, Drew, as well, about even yourself in the time that you've been sober, seeing that shift in society. It's really quite exciting, isn't it? Because I know, you know, when I started out, I vividly remember going to a bar actually and asking for an alcohol-free beer. And he looked at me like I'd grown a second head. And then he reached behind the fridge and he brought out this bottle and he went, like blew the dust off it and handed me a bottle of Caliber. And I'm like, do people still drink that? What is that? And I'm thinking, God, is this what it's going to be like? And actually, no. Fast forward 4 or 5 years, the drink options are fantastic. Even the mindful drinking sections, you know, getting people just thinking about it are there and giving people a choice. And I think, you know, in this country as well, we really are seeing a huge shift in mindset.
Absolutely. I mean, that's such a good point. And that's something I really noticed as well, because, you know, early days, you know, sort of 5 years ago when I was trying to get sober as well, there was no alcohol-free options in anywhere in Australia. It was so difficult to find. And I'd look at posts from people in the UK that have got like Beck's Blue on tap, and I'm like, I would kill for that. Because, you know, like I'm stuck, you know, drinking Coke like a, you know,
like a child.
And then getting jittery and sugar high. And I'm like, I'd love, you know, an alcohol-free beer. But now it's like, yeah, you can get them at most places and restaurants. Like we went out to a restaurant just locally and they had a whole page of, you know, alcohol-free cocktails. And it's just like, that's such a big shift for Australia. It's gone from being something that's really like seen as really like, you know, who would ever drink an alcohol-free beer to having like a whole page of them in a menu. So it's a really interesting shift.
And actually, we know that because it does feel like you guys are a couple of years behind in terms of the alcohol-free alternatives anyway. But we Definitely. Know there's someone we've been talking to, one of the big kind of online alcohol-free distributor type companies that we probably shouldn't say who it is, who are about to start making some big moves into Australia to kind of bring that kind of, you know, go onto one website and order whatever you want kind of culture in a big way to Australia, which is exciting.
Oh, that's good. I do feel like we're a few years behind, so it's nice to hear that.
yeah it's coming. Yep. It's coming. In terms of dry July, like it's like dry January here. We talked to William Porter about this not long ago, and I don't know, there's kind of conflicting thoughts about, is it a good thing? I mean, the positives of it are, as you've already said, dry July, dry January, whatever, is that it kind of gives people a chance to have a think about how they're drinking. And is it, you know, is it something they need to rethink potentially? There's the other side of it, which is then you go, yeah, but 30 days isn't enough. Like just as you start to kind of get to the point where you can potentially start feeling the benefits, you go back to drinking again. What do you think? What's your personal opinion on Dry July? Is it a good idea? Is it, because when you say it on its outset, what can possibly be negative about it? But it's almost like the length of time that it is, 31 days, is that you kind of, there's the risk that you get to the end of it, having completed it. You know, as somebody who's a drinker who gets to the end of that and you go, well, I'm not feeling any different. You know, what's the point of what's the point of removing alcohol full time? Like I did it for a month. I don't feel any different.
Yeah. I think it's I can see both sides. I think that there's obviously a positive in that you're bringing drinking to the spotlight in a more macro social setting. And in terms of like talking about it, there's media coverage of it. Often celebrities do it. This is a charity push so that you'll select a charity and people will like donate to your charity for each day you don't drink or whatever. So there's all that kind of stuff around it. But I think that when you're dealing with people who might have like a more serious addiction, you are looking at like a yo-yo sort of thing. And I know from personal experience that, you know, when I did 3 or 4 weeks off in the past, which I would sometimes do, I'd come back and just drink so much harder because I'm like, you know, I've done my time on the sideline.
Yeah, make up for lost time. Yeah.
Exactly. And also, I just think it's part of the human psyche, you know, that's like similar with like yo-yo dieting or something. Like sometimes when you come back from a break, you can just come back harder and, you know, sort of more Yeah, and so I think that there is a bit of a risk there if you're not a heavy drinker, I don't see any problem, and you're doing it for charity and all that kind of stuff. But I think if you're a really heavy drinker and you sort of just go, oh, going to sort of throw myself into this with no kind of plan for what comes next, or no support, or no one to talk to, or anything like that, it could be a bit of a problematic experience. So I think with all these things, it's probably equal parts yes and no arguments. So how's that for fence sitting? All good.
Love it. You got a splinter in your bottom, Drew.
Always.
Before we move on, we should say, you know, if you are somebody who feels, if you are a heavy drinker, you know, removing alcohol just like that, you know, completely, it can be dangerous. So please do always talk to your doctor if you think there's a risk of physical dependence. Right, let's get back to Drew's bum. Sorry about that. Just have to do the serious bit.
That's fine by me.
Are we moving on from Drew's bum?
We can stay there if you like. But we're a professional setup, so
we
so
are.
Let's
we
move
are,
on.
Sharon, yes.
Let's move on. Drew, for anybody that doesn't know you, do you mind if we rewind 5 years and then a bit and just talk about what life was like for you before you decided to just take a break from alcohol?
Yeah, sure thing. So I guess winding back, maybe let's go back to sort of 2016, 2017. So I was in a fairly average band that were fairly mediocre, but we had a moment and had some good songs on the radio, and we're fortunate enough to, you know, do some touring and that kind of stuff. It was not like a massive success or anything, but it was fun, and you know, we tried to sort of make it our lives and our jobs and everything. But I guess, you know, in that world, I'd always sort of I'd always been a big binge drinker since I was about 13, and I just grew up in the 90s in a culture in Australia, in suburban 90s. And it was just like what you did. It was not really ever thought of as, you know, yeah, it's just no real question. It's just what you did. And from really young, I don't even remember making a conscious decision to drink. It was just like, it was around, it was what was done. You had to kind of prove your manhood by, you know, drinking beer, even though it was fucking disgusting and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then you get a taste for it because it's addictive and it's alcohol and it's a chemical. And so I guess I grew up in that environment, so I was always a heavy drinker. And then as I got more involved in music and more kind of doing those kind of long tours of, you know, playing sort of 35 shows in a kind of, you know, 6 week period, I just started drinking very heavily, like daily. And that kind of spiraled in sort of 2017, 2018. And to the point where I was really like the last kind of tour we did in Europe, I actually made a conscious decision to drink like without remorse or like without like putting a cap on it. I always sort of had this like little voice in the back of my head that would sort of say, that's enough, you know, stop drinking, have a day off tomorrow, that kind of stuff. And that that last tour I just drank till I spewed or passed out every day for like 6 weeks, and it was horrendous. And yeah, it was the first time I'd sort of really scared myself with alcohol, where I was like, wow, that was quite destructive and, you know, overtly self-destructive. Dabbled in drugs since I was a teenager as well, and partied really hard in my early 20s, but that had kind of tapered off, and I'd sort of, you know, found my sort of feet like professionally and with family and all that kind of stuff, and it sort of turned into like a occasional sort of thing. Then again, with the music side of things, it had sort of started to slip back into the sort of heavy abuse that I sort of did in my 20s as well. So not only I found alcohol was sort of a gateway to other things. And then once I sort of got a head of steam up and got a, you know, face full of drugs, I was like, I'd party all weekend and just forget about everything else and responsibilities and all that kind of stuff. And just getting by and not sort of, you know, falling into, you know, wrong sides of the law, or, you know, managing to sort of scrape by in my marriage and stuff. But it was getting to the point where I was probably going to blow up my entire life if I kept going that way. So I sort of felt that I really needed to rein it in at some point. And I actually felt that alcohol was the way to do that. I felt like if I could kind of get rid of booze, that the rest of it would fall over. And luckily that was the case. So alcohol was kind of the key for me to, you know, clean up just in general.
Amazing. That's just such a frightening thought, isn't it? What you said there, that alcohol was, it was going to blow up my life. That's just a hideous thought.
It really is. But I think everyone that's kind of let themselves drink to like, to what they want to drink, like when you sort of hit that moment where you actually go, like, this is how much I would like to drink. If I didn't like have any rules or sort of like conscience floating around my head, if I was allowed to and able to, and I could get away with it, this is how much I would actually drink. I would just drink till I passed out every day. And that's, I think that's the reality, that if you start drinking like that, that's only going one way. And when I got home from that tour, it was really interesting because I thought, oh yeah, I'll just not naturally just go back to how I was. And I was like, I can't, it's gone too far now. Like, it's actually, there is no just going back. I've completely damaged my relationship with alcohol. I can't drink. I can't have one. I can't just have a glass of wine with dinner. I'm having a bottle of wine with dinner, then two, then, you know, beers. And like, this has gotten to the point where it's now slipped into full-blown alcoholism. And that was a really hard moment, but it was one I'm glad I sort of faced up to.
I think it was Claire Pooley in the Sober Diaries that said, once a cucumber becomes a pickle, it can never be a cucumber again.
I love that saying.
It's true.
You know what? Actually, it's one of my favourite sayings. Another one of my favourite sayings. I credit all the time to you, Drew, in our community with the Zoom calls and everything. Every bad decision I ever made started with one beer. That was you, Drew, who said that to me.
Yep, and it's so true. I haven't made so few bad decisions since those beers have gone. It's like, it's also like one of the things I always tell people is like, the thing about like going from, you know, drinking like that to not drinking at all, like when you're drinking, there's just a constant negotiation. You are just chattering with yourself constantly going, I've had one. Oh, I can have another one. Oh, you know, there's just this constant debate. You only have to say no to one drink when you're sober. You just have to say no to the first drink. I would say no, oh yes, oh maybe, oh yeah, I'll have one, and have this negotiation with all 10 drinks in a night. I mean, that's just exhausting. Like, what a waste of time. And like, as hard as it was like, the first drink's the only one I need to have that negotiation with, and then it's done and case closed. I can move on and talk to people and have fun and do all that kind of stuff. So I think it's, in a funny way, it's easier than it seems. Like when you're in the thick of it, it seems like this impossible thing, but realistically you're only having to say no to yourself just this one time, and you just have to be really definitive. And that was something that I got from you, Shaz, from your early post, was that, you know, it's actually an easy decision once you've actually decided. You decide, you commit, and then you just say no, and that's it.
That's it. The hard bit is making that decision, isn't it?
That's the hard bit.
Removing all that bullshit, removing all that flipping noise. Just close the door. Just say no for now.
Yep.
And that is it. And it goes silent. It goes quiet. That's not to say it's easy. And, oh, isn't this sober journey an absolute doddle? It's not. Of course it's not. It's a roller coaster. And if it was easy, the world and his wife wouldn't be drinking, of course. But I love what you just said there. And Ben, get this on your quotes board thingy, please.
Yeah.
Drew Schapper, June 2023, you only need to say no to that first drink. Have I got you right there, Drew, with that quote?
That's brilliant. That's correct.
Yeah,
yep.
And because I stand by that. I think it's just, it's that hard and it's that easy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's simple and it's, that's the thing. It can be simple, but it's not. That's not easy. You know, often the simplest things are the hardest things, and that's one of the truisms I think of sobriety, is that you know exactly what you have to do. But I think I took a lot of heart from your comment about, you know, early on about committing and saying that if I fully decide not to do this, then it just becomes a matter of fulfilling that commitment each day. And I really, that's kind of the way I approached it. And it was always this, like, I'm not drinking now. And it doesn't matter too far in the future. It doesn't matter for how long. It doesn't matter, you know, what I'm going to do in 5 years, 10 years, whatever. It was just like, tonight I'm not drinking. And every night I went out or had to go play or go to weddings or go to, you know, whatever, like these, because, you know, the first year is really hard because there's all these firsts. You have to do a first.
Really,
Christmas
tough.
The first. You know, all this kind of stuff. And each time I just gave myself a little pep talk and went, you know, I'm just not drinking today. That's all I have to do. Just get through today and then we'll figure out what's next tomorrow.
And it also makes it far less overwhelming as well, because so many people go, well, I don't want to stop forever. I don't want to be sober. Nobody needs to think
exactly
about that. You know, you, myself and Ben now, all chatting, not one of us went, I'm going to stop drinking alcohol and that is me done forever. We all went, right, I'm just going to take a break. And then we all went, oh, crap, it's actually working. But if you can break it down.
I'm not a complete basket case now. Like,
yeah.
Well, I am, but, you know, not in that
way.
You are.
But it makes it more manageable and completely less overwhelming. And like you say, Drew, you're just not drinking for now and then just see what mad shit begins to happen.
Exactly right. Something I try and tell people in the early journey, it's a really like delicate sort of balancing act between like holding yourself accountable so that you don't slip up and constantly and just keep resetting. And being kind enough to yourself that you don't sort of spiral and go into that negative. Because I know that I'm shocking with the self-talk. I like, you know, chastise myself about all kinds of shit. And that was the same with drinking. I'd be like, oh, you piece of shit. You drunk again, blah, 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 blah. And that would sort of enable the spiral of like, well, you're already drunk. So who cares if you, you know, smash a pile of drugs as well. And then, you know, then I'm like, oh, God, you're such a piece of shit. You've been up all night drinking, taking drugs. I'm like, who cares if you drink all day the next day? And so you don't want to slip into that. But at the same time, you don't want to just like, you want to hold yourself to account. So you have to be like a velvet sledgehammer with yourself. So you have to be like accountable, but like enough velvet to be like nice to yourself, but still hammering yourself. I don't know. I sort of always try
get that on your quote board as well, Ben. I can see him scribbling. The velvet.
I've already got Drew on my quotes board with the, you know, every bad decision ever made started with one drink. Like, he's already up there. In fact, you're next to Michael Jordan. Once I made a decision, I never thought about it again.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's really interesting that he's, yeah. You can sort of see that with him, can't you? It's like once the decision's there, that's it. And yeah.
We're just going to take a very quick break from this fabulous chat with the lovely Drew. I could talk to him all day, Ben. I really, really like Drew a lot.
He's a wonderful, wonderful man and a rock star.
Rock star, isn't he? A sober rock star. How things can change.
It's like, hang on, so you had songs on the radio and you toured foreign countries. I think that classes as being a rock star.
He is in our eyes. He will always be a rock star in our eyes. And I love the fact as well with Drew. I've known Drew probably for the best part of 5 years now. He's on t'other side of the actual world. Like, we've never met IRL in real life. The power of the internet and all that jazz. And again, it comes round to the thing that we bang on about a lot in this, on this podcast and in this community, the power of connection. Big up your bad self if you are on the other side of the world, not only as a listener, but also as a community member. It blows my mind that we have got real life friendships that have come about simply because somebody will say at the tip top of Scotland has joined the community and somebody at the very bottom of Australia has joined the community, and they can talk to each other every day, can't they?
Did you know? So we've got Nicole, who's a community member in Brisbane, and she runs with Davina.
I know.
They FaceTime each other and they run together, and then Nicole around Brisbane and Davina around Devon, and then they'll have coffee and cake with each other
it's
afterwards.
So good. It's just good, so good. So cool. I love it.
I think, you know, hopefully we have got a lot of Australians / New Zealanders listening, because obviously it's our dry July episode, our first dry July episode with Drew today. You might think, oh, well, you know, I'd love to join that community, but it's all in the UK. We've got calls all through the day, and the whole point of it is that we cross different time zones. So our Rossies are currently joining us on our first thing in the morning calls here in the UK, because it's evening calls for you guys over there. So I mean, it's about five different time zones in Australia.
Yeah, can we not get into this now? Because not only will we fry everybody's brain, we'll fry our own.
Let's say our morning is your evening.
Yeah.
And we've got people joining us on, you know, they've done the day at work, they come back and they join a load of weirdos from the internet to have a chat about alcohol-free life in their evenings. But don't forget, we've got them every single, like literally Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, those calls.
Yeah.
So that works for you in Australia or New Zealand. every night of the week, you could be joining us on Zoom.
And also, on the flip side of that, we have got evening calls here in the UK, British summertime, that are 7 o'clock or evening, which means for the early risers in Australia and New Zealand.
The really early risers
Really early risers. Yeah. You're like, what are you doing up at this time? Listen, I know you're alcohol-free, but come on. Come on, have a lie in.
We do have people doing it.
Oh, we do. So, we do. You know. I do a Friday night call, which is at 7 o'clock in the UK. The amount of people that jump on that from all different time zones, and I can't work out if people are eating their evening meal or if it's a bowl of cereal. You don't like to ask sometimes, do you?
That's one of the biggest cons, Sharon, that cereal is a breakfast food. Anyway, let's not go down
that
route.
Here we go.
If you're an Australian, if you are living in the beautiful country that is New Zealand, I say that having never been but seen it on things like Lord of the Rings, and I'm desperate to go. I cannot wait to go to New Zealand one day. Then you are absolutely welcome in our alcohol-free online community. It's basically, it's the Zoom calls, but it's also the forum. We've got a member-to-member messenger, so you can, it's OTI chat, so you can chat to other members who are doing the same thing as you. It's people who are choosing to remove alcohol from their life for the positive lifestyle benefits that being alcohol-free brings. But we know that it's not easy, so it's all about connection. It's all about getting together and doing it together. overtheinfluence.co.uk is the address you need. overtheinfluence.co.uk, and just because it's got .co.uk on the end doesn't mean that people in Australia, New Zealand, America, wherever, you're all welcome. Come and join us. overtheinfluence.co.uk. Have I said that web address enough times, Sharon Hartley?
Well, should we just say it again, just in case you didn't hear that? It's overtheinfluence.co.uk. And if there's a question that you'd like answering and you can't find the information on the website, ping me an email. Seriously, we are there to answer any questions that you might have. Obviously, it might take us a little bit of time to reply because I might be asleep, Ben might be in bed while you're... You know what I'm trying to say? You know what I'm trying to say? Other side of the world
times,
and all that.
Time zones. Our summer, their winter, weird.
Yeah, all that. Yeah. Don't matter where you are in the world, get involved. We'd love to hear from you. And the email address, if you've got any questions at all, is otihq at overtheinfluence.co.uk. Right, let's get back to the episode with Drew.
Maybe this is a good time to talk about that kind of the early days, but people may be finding this episode because it's dry July over there and the other side of the world. But it's a difficult thing, isn't it? Because there is that very delicate balance. The confidence that you get from removing alcohol, and it's a confidence that it's not only an alcohol-free confidence that builds in terms of, right, well, I'm doing this and I've done another day and I'm feeling more confident about removing alcohol. It's a confidence that feeds into every other aspect of your life, isn't it? Or at least it was for me, where you go, oh my God, I've done this thing. This is a addictive substance that is aggressively marketed to us at every turn. It's constantly advertised. It's so deeply embedded into not just kind of, you know, society as a whole, but all these different rituals that we have that build up the fabric of that society. Like, it's everywhere. And I've removed it and I'm doing it every single day. But you're right, if you go back and have a drink, then that confidence can just be smashed. I was reminded of this recently, Drew. I did it, that whole negative self-talk thing where I've given up smoking. I gave up smoking cigarettes probably about 18 months, 2 years ago, but I've been vaping ever since then. And then 2 months ago, I stopped the vape. I had the worst few days. Like, it felt like shit for 3 days, terrible. The first week still wasn't great. After 3 weeks, I felt like nicotine had gone. You know, I've done this thing. I'm feeling really proud of myself. Then I had my stag do, and I wasn't drinking, Drew, on my stag do. So I can have a few cigarettes. I haven't had a cigarette for years. I've been vaping. But I go, yeah, go on, mate. Let me have one of them cigarettes. And then, you know, the next day I go, oh, I nicked a few cigarettes off the boys last night. I should probably go and buy another packet and give them the cigarettes they've not asked for. And, you know, so quickly, then I came back off it and I had exactly that thing of, oh my God, you idiot. But maybe I needed a bit more of the velvet there to go, well, you know, just because you've done this doesn't mean that everything's ruined. And now I'm back off the cigarettes again. Now, do you know what I mean?
Exactly, it's right. And that's what I mean with that sort of thing. Like, you hold yourself to account, but like, if you do slip up, like, and you see this all the time, like, you know, if you do 4 or 5 days of drinking out of a year, but you've gone from being a heavy drinker to like not drinking for like 360 days and you've drunk for a couple of days, it doesn't undo all that work. And so I think that that's where I think it can be a bit binary sometimes. Like, I think sometimes you just do have to sit back and reflect and go, no, I managed to do all this amazing stuff, and don't let the small percentage of times that you slipped up, you know, kind of undo your whole effort, because that's no good either. Because I'm such an all or nothing kind of person. I would let that one slip up completely ruin the entire experience. And that's why I have to do complete alcohol free, because I just am that personality. I can't help it. It's who I am. So I just went with it rather than trying to kid myself that I could start moderately drinking, and I probably could. I just don't want to tempt it. And I just also know that in the back of my mind, I'll go, oh, no, that one little drink will have just undone 5 years, even though that's logically not the case. Yeah,
that's spot on. I had a personal trainer once say to me, because, you know, obviously you never, the ideal situation is that you decide to become alcohol free and you keep building up those days, you keep building up that confidence. You get that kind of momentum, then all these great other things start happening, the unexpected things. Oh my God, never thought that would happen when I removed alcohol. That's the dream scenario. I suppose if you do have a slip, a blip, a relapse, whatever you want to call it, the trick is getting back on it, isn't it? I had this personal trainer who said to me, he goes, right, okay, because my big thing, I do it with food now, Drew. It's classic, once you pop, you can't stop, the Pringles. Like, I'll have a biscuit, and then I'm halfway through the packet, and I look down, and I go, oh my God, what am I doing? I remember saying this to him, that this is my problem. Once I kind of start eating crap, I can't stop eating crap. And he goes, it's like, okay, you got a new car, right? And you drive your new car home for the first time and you get a puncture. He goes, do you get out of the car and set the whole car on fire? Because, oh, you've got a puncture now. Is it fuck the whole car? No, you change the tyre. Do you know what I mean? And you change the tyre and you get back on the road. And I just think that's such a good analogy, because Why are you going to set the car on fire? Like, just get back on it. Just change the tire and get back on it.
Exactly. It's just perfectionism, isn't it, really? It's just like, you know, when you're striving for perfection, you're always going to fail. So I think in a lot of ways, like, I've certainly had that with myself in the past when I've tried to, you know, address alcohol or drugs or anything. I'm like, well, I wasn't perfect, so fuck it. You know, I'm not perfect, so I suck. I'm just going to launch back into it. And so, it was really interesting with doing this stint of sobriety, which is now, you know, entering into the sort of, you know, I'm coming up to sort of, I've done sort of 4.5 years now. I just had to do it completely sober. And then once I got through the first year, I just sort of thought, well, even though the first year was such a big roller coaster for me and I went through a full range of emotions I really wasn't expecting. But once I'd sort of done that, I sort of thought, well, that was hard and I don't want to do that again, so I'm just going to keep going. And then sort of things get very, like, sort of mellow out in a way that I wasn't really expecting either. And now, you know, in a relatively short amount of time, because I was drinking from sort of 13 to sort of 36, which is, you know, what sort of, I guess like 23 to 25 years of drinking, but some really heavy drinking for at least, you know, 15 years. And it's all been completely and utterly, like, I don't think about alcohol anymore. It never crosses my mind. I don't get cravings. I don't really think about it. And to have that sort of shift so dramatically over only 4 years next to all of that behavior from an early teenager to someone in my sort of mid to late 30s, I feel is like that's quite a lot of change quite quickly. And so it's a funny thing, like, time feels so glacial in the first year. Each day just like feels like an age, and then very quickly, like, it doesn't. And so I think that that's the thing that I sort of got down, that, you know, it was going to be like this forever, and then very quickly it's just not like that forever. And then all of a sudden you end up feeling just not really anything about alcohol. I don't look at it and think I can get wine from the fridge, I can serve wine, I can be around alcohol, I can, you know, it just doesn't cross my mind that I would ever have one now. And that's just such a big shift that's really happened in the last 12 months, which I've noticed.
That's so good to share. And that'll help so many people listening to this, because, It is hard. And in fact, in the early stages, you think it's impossible. I used to listen to people like me with 12 months, 2 years, three, four. And I thought, how did they, what? How? No, it's impossible. It's impossible, but it's not. And from what you've shared there and, you know, your levels of drinking, Drew, it does all change. But one thing I want to come back to is where you're talking about just treating yourself like shit and talking down to yourself in that cycle of shame and the drinking and, oh, here we go again. Well, actually, we might as well just carry on, and it just keeps going and going and going. On the flip side of that, when alcohol is removed and you start to learn everything about who you ever were, because it's all under there, it's all there, it just needs to come out. That process in itself is and continues to be utterly terrifying, especially when it's things like, oh, what you mean you still like me and I'm not a drunken dick? In fact, you've never known that previous version. Oh, actually, I'm really good at that. Actually, wow. I really care massively about this. And layer by layer, it all sort of starts to come out. I still find that process really quite, what's the word? Terrifying, I think, at times, Drew. Like, oh, here we go again.
Absolutely. No, I totally agree. And, like, I mean, it's utterly terrifying, but I think that it's terrifying because it's exciting as well. Like, and I think that, you know, if you're not shitting yourself, you don't care. So, you know.
This is me daily. This is my life daily, Drew.
So it's kind of, I try, I guess, when I'm really terrified, to sort of remind myself that, you know, you're terrified because you care, and, you know, this is interesting, you know, layers of your psyche and of your personality and stuff. And it is, it's truly, like, fascinating. I used to, like, take heaps of psychedelics and stuff, and I honestly reckon sober is the most psychedelic thing. Like actually going into your consciousness unaltered is, like, amazing. Like, what your brain's capable of and what you can do with it, and what you can do with it, like, free of being, you know, as kind of dulling it. Because I think that, like, a lot of people are, you know, I got very anxious socially, and so I would, you know, just, like, smash a few pints back, and then, you know, the anxiety goes, but then it comes back, you know, tenfold. So it's sort of like, you know, making tomorrow's you pay for today's, you know, ease of behavior and stuff. And so I just found that, like actually having to sit there and, like, go through, you know, panic attack or some kind of anxious bout in a social situation was really quite incredible. And once I started doing that, I was like, wow, this is, like, scary as shit, but it's actually kind of amazing. And then you sort of get your way through it and start to build a bit more resilience in that way as well. So I think there's a lot of unforeseen benefits that I just wasn't prepared for at all, and things I didn't even know about myself. I didn't even realize I was drinking to mask those kinds of feelings. I just thought I was, you know, like, trying to have fun, but so much of it was like, I've just walked into a room with 400 people, I'm really nervous, and I just, you know, have an easy out, and then all of a sudden you don't. But I just started doing things like just leave it, walk out of the venue for a bit and have a breather outside, like all these little coping strategies that you can do that are just really, yeah, amazing. So
it's really interesting hearing you kind of look back on that period without the rose-tinted glasses. Because I think it can be easy to look back and remember just the good bits about drinking when you decided to remove it. Because, look, let's face it, you know, we all drank, and yeah, okay, there are some things that I look back on and I feel pretty embarrassed about. There are things that I said or did that I wish I'd never said or did, and no, I wouldn't have said or done if alcohol hadn't have been in my system. But, you know, in my 20s, we talked to, was it the young Mumsy Mom, Shaz, we talked to about this, how actually it's okay to say that drinking alcohol kind of worked for you in your 20s. Like, you know, for me in my 20s, it enhanced the experience of going out on a night out, for example. It was in my 30s that things started to change, and I was drinking more for stress rather than kind of enjoyment. But it's okay to look back on it, I think, and say, well, it worked for me then, but in the context of my life now, it doesn't work. But it's really interesting for you to, you know, to look back on it, and especially because you were a rock star, Do you know what I mean? Oh, like,
so wasn't like, a rock star.
Right. Okay. You toured with a band abroad. That is amazing.
Like, you were in our eyes, Drew.
You are. Yeah. I mean, can I ask? Like, obviously, you do remember it quite clearly in that sense, and you remember the kind of, you know, feeling anxiety in a room full of people. Do you ever have that thing where you look back on it and you go, because I know that you are a very stable family man who loves his family and loves your lifestyle now. Do you ever look back on the kind of hedonistic days with any sort of longing? Or actually, are you very, very happy to have left them in the past?
That's an interesting question. I think, yeah, I think earlier, like in my 20s, I think it was like, it was okay. It was sort of fun. It was not as out of control as like it probably looked from the outset. But I was also like, I was with a group of people who like, we'd kind of normalized this crazy behavior. And when I sort of met other people and I was like, not everyone in their 20s behaves like this. Like, not everyone stays up for 48 hours, you know, doing MDMA and it's like, and when I see like younger people nowadays and I see them not doing that, I sort of think, wow, that was pretty outrageous. And I find it really hard to see the positives, to be honest. I mean, I had some great nights and some great connections, but for me, it's mostly characterized by talking a whole lot of bullshit that I don't remember a fucking word of it. And just thinking, what a waste of, you know, what a waste of my words. Like, I just like talked shit at someone for hours. And yeah, I mean, there are nights where I go, yeah, that was great. And sometimes I miss like the abandon or like the that kind of thing of like where you can, you know, have an escape that's like so foolproof. Like, you know that if you like have a pint and stick a pill in your mouth that you're going to have, you know, you can sort of curate like your experience, and you know that there's no, it takes out variables because it's like, you know, something, a drug like ecstasy, for example, it's the same shit every time. It's like, just like cookie cutter, like I'm going to be happy. I'm going to feel love and all this sort of shit. But then the flip side of it just gets worse and worse and worse. And you start, the equation starts getting worse and worse. So each time you do it, like you get less of the fun for more of the hangovers, for more of the come downs, for more of the anxiety post. And then I remember like the night where I sort of said, this is the final straw, and I hadn't, like in what I call an accidental bender, where I was sort of like, I'm going to have a few beers. And that very quickly turned into like, I had like six pack, you know, before I'd even blinked. And then I'd had like 10 weeks of no drinking. So I was completely hammered. And then I ended up having like cocaine, ketamine, acid, and like ecstasy as well. And I was just so off my face. And I just thought like, this is so dumb. And I was really high and really enjoying myself for about half an hour. And then I had like, I reckon 3 weeks of feeling like horrendous from it. And I was just like, this equation is so bad.
The math just doesn't work, does it? Yeah.
Like, it's such a bad equation. Like, even if you took all the health benefits of sobriety out of it, just from like that cost benefit of like, I've had like an hour of feeling great for like 3 weeks of agony. It's terrible. It's such a bad equation. And that's really, that was when I kind of like had the final straw of like, and that's the last time I drank. That was a bender that didn't need to happen. It was a bender that was the result of just poor planning, not being fully committed to sobriety, and just that thing of like, oh, I can have a few drinks. And that was like, that's where a few drinks leads. And if it doesn't lead there to that kind of bender, it's just an accident. Like, for me, that's always in there. That's where I want to go. That's where alcohol sends me. That's just opening the door. So if I have one drink, like a dinner, that's where my brain just goes straight to there. That's where it wants to be. And so that's why I've just like shut the door completely. So in answer to your question in a very roundabout way, I don't really have rose-colored glasses about it anymore. I've kind of moved beyond it. Like, to me, it just feels like a different life, and a life that I don't regret or anything, because I feel like, you know, I'm me, and that was part of me getting to me, and, you know, I'll continue growing, but I certainly wouldn't want to go back there, and I certainly don't sort of sit there and go, I miss that.
Of got one more deep and probably almost impossible question to ask you, Drew, which is, how much of it can you blame on the environment? Because you just said something then that you were surrounded by people who normalised kind of crazy behaviour. Maybe we shouldn't use the example of cricket at the moment between our two countries.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, let's say football. If your passion had been football instead of music, do you think that, you know, your cucumber would have become a pickle? That sounds wrong, isn't it? Do you think that the environment has, or do you think that your personality was drawn to that environment?
Interesting. I'm not sure. I think I loved sport as well. Like I played sport at a pretty high level, and you know I was always really fit and active, and did a lot of self-flagellated post-bender with runs and, you know, going to the gym and all that kind of stuff. So I think I was very, like, schizophrenic with my relationship with booze and alcohol. I thought, like, if I could kind of, you know, exercise my way out of it, you know, it would sort of minimize what I'd done or all that kind of stuff. So I think part of it was, like, access. I think that, you know, I had access to a lot of drugs that a lot of people may not have had access to. It was cheap and it was easy and it was available. And that was risky, I think, for me and my personality. I think I had a lot of access to alcohol from a very young age. And I think that kind of embedded the neural pathways of like being a pleasure seeker. And I think that definitely played its part, but I also sought it out. So I think that, you know, as much as you don't want to blame, you know, 13-year-old yourself, still, you know, I was very calculating in the way I did it. I used to nick booze off my parents all the time, and it was, you know, it was a very covert operation with me and my mates. So it was very calculating. So I knew exactly what I was doing. So I don't really blame anyone. I think that it's just part and parcel with who I am and who I was, but you know, kind of an obsessive kind of person. It's, you know, if it's not alcohol, it's something, and if it's not, you know, cupcakes, it's golf, and if it's not, you know, I'm just trying to learn how to like channel it into ways that aren't as, you know, destructive as booze and drugs, which are very destructive.
Yeah, cupcakes and cricket and golf, it's better, isn't it, really, all round.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know about the cupcakes. The lockdown cupcakes are a serious thing.
And like, how is your bacon anyway? Are your cupcakes shite or are they all right?
No. It was a real lockdown thing. I kind of let it go. Shaz, sort of, you know.
Oh, it will never not tickle me that. Drew, when we started this chat, and it's flown, by the way, I can't believe that hour has gone. It's absolutely flown. You use words like mediocre, an average, to describe your band and life on the road. Throughout the course of this hour, you are far from average. You are most definitely not mediocre. To me and Ben, you are still that rock star, Drew.
And it's been an
absolute pleasure. Are you still part of a band, still touring the world? What are you up to?
No, not really. It's kind of, obviously, like with COVID and everything, it's sort of like ran its natural course, but I am playing music again, which is really good. So yeah, a couple of guys that I played with during that period, we're sort of starting something new. So yeah, I'm playing a bit more recently, which is really good to get back out there a bit. But I'm treating it much more like it's just like a, you know, weekend hacker kind of thing. So no plans for anything like that. So I feel like I've had my run at that kind of thing, but I love music and I'll always do it in some part of me. So yeah, I'll always play in some capacity.
And Drew, before you go, you of course wrote a book, and it is one of the most beautiful reads ever. Where can people find it, and what's it called?
It's called After Party, and it's by my author name, which is Drew Charles, which is just my first and middle name. So I just dropped the Chapa because it's too hard to spell and pronounce, so I didn't want to go through all that.
I do like Drew
all
Charles.
That sort of stuff. So,
and there, yeah, it's a stage, Drew Charles.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like my name that's truncated. So my full name's, you know, Andrew Charles Chapa. So I just like took the ends off, and yeah. So, but yeah, that's available anywhere on Amazon, those kinds of things. And really, it's just about, I guess the reason I wanted to write it was, you know, when I was getting sober, I sort of documented everything. So I sort of wrote like daily posts and just daily musings and poems and all kinds of things that I was sort of going through at the time. And what I noticed with the queer literature that I was like reading at the time was it was all very much like, you know, from like where we are now, Shaz, looking back and sort of narrating that. And I just wondered if there was anything out there for people that like a bit more like in it with them in that sort of first year. And so I thought that kind of first year of sobriety, like blow by blow account, you know, each of the first, like, how did you go at your first wedding? How did you go at your first, you know, Christmas? All those kinds of things mixed with, like, you know, the historical, I guess, occasions when I'd kind of made an ass of myself or, you know, done shit that I wasn't proud of and stuff like that. Yeah, I just wanted that book for people that were really, like, in it. So just to make them feel like, you know, the people, everyone that gets sober has that first year. No one goes through it. No one skips that bit. And I just wanted to kind of focus on that so that people felt like they were a bit more, had some, you know, support and could fall back on something that really understood where they're sitting at the moment.
And your writing, I've genuinely never read anything like it. It's just so beautiful and so powerful. So hand on heart, I can thoroughly recommend After Party by the one and only author, Drew Charles. Drew, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence. Absolutely brilliant to catch up. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure as always. And it's always great to catch up with you guys and see where you're at.
What a fabulous episode. I say it every week, and it sounds like we're sort of blowing our own trumpet. It's because we are. The guests we get on this podcast are absolutely fantastic. Drew in Australia is absolutely no exception. Really, really enjoyed that. Talking of people living in Australia, maybe in New Zealand, on the other side of the world, one thing we bang on about in this community is the power of connection. And to be honest with you, it doesn't really matter where you are. I'll just quickly tell you this as well, Ben. I was hosting a Zoom call last night and one of our members was on there. He's from Venezuela, right? He's from...
That is so cool.
And I go, are you? And I just think, how did little old OTI make it to Venezuela for this member to sign up and join us, who has now done a hike with some members in Scotland?
Of course,
right? So
of course.
Work that
obviously.
One out.
Yeah.
Obviously.
We should say, if you are listening in Australia or New Zealand, because this is a Dry July special, because obviously we do Dry January here, and we talked about all this in the episode with Drew. Don't need to go over it again. What we do need to say is that if you want to, if you know, in the middle bit, we talked about the community and how, you know, if you are in Australia or New Zealand, there are calls that work for your time zone every evening, basically, for you guys. If you were like, oh, tempted by that, but still I'm not sure how that works. How would that work? This Friday, try it at 8 a.m. UK time. So 8 a.m. BST. Google that and whatever time zone you're in Australia or New Zealand. Well, New Zealand has only got one time zone. Australia's got four, I think.
Right.
Or five. One of them changes by half an hour.
Oh, stop it.
Stop. Head hurts. Google it yourself, wherever you are. 8 a.m. BST in your time zone, because we're doing it's Friday, 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 Triday. Which way round is it?
It's Friday, Triday.
It's a Friday, Triday for Over the Influence. What that means is that you can come on a free Zoom with me in the morning or your evening, Australia and New Zealand, 8 a.m. BST. And you do one at 6 p.m. BST.
Yeah. All you need to do is head to the website. If you type in overtheinfluence.co.uk/Triday, you'll see Ben's lovely face there. You'll see my giant super moon head. Select which one you fancy. Not which one you fancy like that, but which time you'd like to join. overtheinfluence.co.uk/Triday. And just jump in, come and say hello on the Zoom. Won't cost you a penny, and we can answer any questions that you might have. We'd love to see you.
So that's overtheinfluence.co.uk/Triday, because it's a Friday, Triday. Love a Friday, Triday.
You get so enthusiastic when you say that. Friday, Triday.
But it kind of, it feels like it's a, I don't know, I need to put on a voice for it. It's a Friday try day. You know what I mean? Like,
there's a car park at the rear.
There's a car park at the rear. Come and join Over the Influence on a free Friday try day.
I love
feels
that.
Like that, doesn't it?
It's good.
I used to do adverts when I was younger.
I can tell.
The new Vauxhall Corsa, only £8,995. And I'd say things like, only £8,995, because it said it in the script, thinking, £8,995? Blimey. We're going off track. It is free. Friday try day, it's free. Just come and meet us and come and see if you think that a bit of connection could work for you. overtheinfluence.co.uk/try day, because it's a Friday try day. Right, I need to stop now.
Stop.
Need to stop. Stop me.
We'd love to see you online. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Wherever you are in the world. But in particular this month, because it is a dry July. Dry, try, fry. There's a lot of rhyming.
Yeah, it's a Friday try day. It's a try, dry July with you and I.
Right. We've really confused like the website here. Right, hang on.
Yeah.
overtheinfluence.co.uk/ try day.
And
there
now
we go.
We will leave.
We'll
see
go
you
now.
Next week. Yeah. For more Dry July special content.
Try with I, me and thee, I, you,
stop.
Me, bye.
Bye.